another committee real quick because they're taking some big votes. She promises me this won't take too long, so if she does, we just don't have to pass it, that's all. Senator Moi, Senate File 368.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. If you recall, the last time I was here, I came before you on the Asian Pacific Culture Center, which was vetoed, and I came asking you to help get us out of here so we can finally get it done. Well, I'm here before you again for yet another project that was vetoed in 2002, and ever since then, we've been piecemealing trying to get the project done. And I'm here to ask you to help us get the last $3.8 million to match federal dollars that cannot be extended anymore. So for this extra $3.8 million, we get the last piece of $2.67 million of federal dollars. There's a very pretty picture in front of you if you just take a look at it. This project is a part of our National Great River Park River Edge Protection Project, and the first picture on top is the existing revetment that's there, and what we're trying to do is to, once it is completed, it will look like the second photograph on the right-hand side, which is the proposed riprap that we have in place. The two areas that this money will go to fund are the two areas that are highlighted in red on the left-hand side. Again, this is a project that's been in the waiting for a long, long time, and we're just asking for this last 3.8 to get our last 2.6 federal dollars to get the project
Senator
finished.
Senator Moss, show me a picture of what you're...
I don't think we got it.
Okay, now I got it. All right. Okay.
And Mr. Chair,
where,
I have
where is the pretty picture, Mr. Okay. Chair?
Well, I know.
It's the blow-up of
the Senator Kubley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I was just looking at this sheet. I don't see the pretty picture she's referring to at the top of the page.
These are ugly pictures. Anyway.
I meant the pretty picture sitting here at the table, Mr. Chair.
Well, now I got it. You're off the hook.
Chair, I have with me Mr. Bob Bierscheid, who is from our Parks and Recs Department. He just has a couple of things to share with the committee, but he's here to answer questions, too.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Moore and Chair Tomasani.
Nice try.
We appreciate very much.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just making a couple of quick comments about this. As Senator Moore mentioned, we are here because of the critical role that the federal dollars play in the development of the National Great River Park. And the funding before you that this request will allow us to move forward and complete the shoreline protection project, which we started several years ago. The riprapping that will run along the Mississippi River both improves and protects the environment and makes the river a more attractive and safe place to live and recreate for both families and tourists. The purpose for the bonding request this year is very simple. We will not meet federal matching requirements and will lose the last piece of federal dollars if we are not able to fully complete the entire project this year. We do have the support of several groups, including the National Audubon Society, the National Park Service, the St. Paul Riverfront Development Corporation, and the Lower Phelan Corridor Coalition, made up of approximately 25 groups. We thank you very much for your time, and if you have any questions, we certainly would be able to answer those.
Mr. Bierscheid, is this the same project that got $2.5 million for redesign and design?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. This was the first part of that project. We just did not have enough funds to complete it and to make the match of the federal government.
So this is another $3.8 million on top of the $2.5 for design and pre-design?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bierscheid, is there any attempt to attract local dollars? I'm talking about corporate or other kinds of partner dollars.
Mr. Chair.
Part of the match.
Mr. Chair and Senator, as part of the overall project, this is a multi-million dollar project throughout the river. For the National Great River Park, it runs the 17 miles of the city of St. Paul. And on the other parts of the project, there is local monies and corporate involvement in that project. In the particular riprap project itself, we are using the state monies to match the federal monies.
Mr. Chairman, for a follow-up, please, Mr. Bierscheid, why is there not available any corporate or other kinds of partner dollars right in the city of St. Paul?
Mr. Chair and Senator,
community.
Again, as I said, in the overall project, in the riprap project, quite frankly, because it isn't a, it doesn't attract the
structure.
The industrial part of it is that an environmental protection part of it rather than active recreation use. And that's particularly why corporations haven't participated in that, but the federal government has, because they realize the significance to the river and to the development of the rest of the park in the future.
Senator Parasol?
No, thank you.
Okay. Senator Moore, we don't have a quorum yet, so we're going to just lay this over. We're going to take two different types of actions today, and one of them there. Now we have a quorum. Quorum is present. And so Mr. O'Rourke, explain what we're going to be doing here today.
Mr. Chair, members, all the bills before the committee today are of a bonding nature, some of which we are going to lay over and some of which we will pass on to finance. After both today's hearing and Wednesday's hearing, we can also be submitting a letter to the chair of the bonding committee with some of our recommendations. As far as moving from committee into the bonding committee, the finance committee is actually the committee that would move them over, but we will just submit a letter with some recommendations. But there are two bills today that the finance chair has requested that we get into the finance committee if possible, and that would be Senate File 292 of Senator Clark's and Senate File 57 of Senator Pretner Solon's.
And they've already been in front of the bonding committee, so they're a little bit different than all the rest of them. So, Senator Moore, we'll lay this over, and then we'll include it in the letter of recommendation to the bonding committee when we send it over there. Okay?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would really appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you
very
members.
Much. Thank you. Okay. Senator Clark. Welcome to a committee you could have been on.
And I'm here in spirit, Mr. Chair. I really am with you.
Go ahead, Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We're very glad to be in front of you today. The bill in front of you is to renovate the National Hockey Center in St. Cloud. And before we get going too far, if we have a page or somebody who could pass out. Oh, they did already? Okay.
These? We got
no,
these.
No.
Not these?
Yes. No, we have something else. We have another little visual thing that we handed out at the bonding committee, and I know Senator Metzen will be excited to have another one, mostly because we know how hot it can be, and we want you to think, go Huskies. But just from a background standpoint, the National Hockey Center is attached to St. Cloud State, is not a separate city-related entity. It started through the Amateur Hockey League, or Amateur Sports Commission, excuse me. And it was originally done with not a whole lot of revenue. We have two great pieces of ice and... Okay. I guess we're waiting. Cap, thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. But a lot of other things had to be done kind of in a pretty inexpensive way, so it's not very accessible. People have to stand outside when they come in to get tickets. It feels a little bit like a high school place. There's a number of other issues, and the people who are with me will get a chance to talk a little bit more about that. But this is really the gateway for our region. This is the first place that many people come. It's well used. Both St. Cloud State's men and women's hockey teams play there. St. John's men's team plays there. Tech High School's team plays there. A number of children's and students' activities are there as well. So it is quite well used. And is well worth making sure that we are able to make sure it's of a grade that we can stay competitive. It is our only sport that is D1 at St. Cloud State. And from a competitiveness standpoint, it's important that we have the kind of facility that we can continue to attract and recruit. Boy, we just get off out here with the fans going.
Go ahead.
Maybe we should have waited.
It's like elementary school.
It is. It is, but they're really fun, and if yours doesn't work, I'm sure we can have a replacement one, because they say fun things.
There'll be some red.
So without further ado, I think I'm actually going to turn it over to Steve Ludwig, who's our Vice President for Administrative Affairs, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark, I got to find out where these came from, because I'm going to get some red, white, and green ones that say vote Tomasoni.
I like your mugs.
I think we have somebody here who can provide you technical assistance on that, Mr. Chair.
It says on here.
Senator Metzen.
They're made in China, though, so you're...
How do you know? It doesn't say on there anyway.
We work on the range. Yeah.
Well, we have a steel mill on the range that has a partnership with China.
Mr. Chair, I think it'd be a great economic development tool for Minnesota if we would venture into this business.
I agree. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Ludwig.
Thank you, Senator Clark. Chair Tomasoni, my name is Steve Ludwig. I'm the Administrative Vice President at St. Cloud State University. We've provided to you today a document that looks like this that provides a lot of the facts and some illustrations of the project that we're proposing. This project is part of the university's master plan. It was anticipated that in the future we'd be able to do this on this site where we were constrained by our budget and by the demands of the project at that time, but we allowed space on the site to add on to it in the future, just south of the National Hockey Center. This will improve services for spectators, capacity for spectators to a certain extent, and locker rooms for competitors, be they from Mites all the way up through our college program at St. Cloud State and at St. John's University that use the arena. We're proposing a project that will cost about $13 million, $11 in funding from the state of Minnesota, and $2 million that we would raise locally. We are prepared to move immediately into design as we've completed pre-design and are prepared to move forward. And that pretty much is a quick summary of our project with the material you have in front of you. And with that, I would like to ask if the chair would approve that Dr. Morris Kurtz, our athletic director, could address a couple of issues with regard to the facility.
Dr. Kurtz.
Thank you. My name is Morris Kurtz. It's been my pleasure to serve as athletic director at St. Cloud State University for the last 23 years. I had the pleasure of being here 20 years ago when the National Hockey Center first received funding, and we're very appreciative of that, and I think everyone would agree that we've been wonderful stewards of the taxpayers' dollars. In short, we are an economic engine, not just for St. Cloud State University, but all indeed for Central Minnesota, whether it's youth hockey for young boys and girls, Division I varsity hockey, St. John's University, Tech High School, concerts, trade shows. We are a facility that's open 7 days a week and does exactly what the taxpayers intended. The building has many wonderful attributes. We simply need to enter into an age where we can continue doing what we've accomplished so far, whether that's youth tournaments or concerts or trade shows. We need to do it a little bit better and hopefully increase. Having a lobby where people can't stay inside or out in the elements when they're purchasing tickets is not good. We can do so much more, both for the university and Central Minnesota, with this addition, and we look forward to that funding. We also have with us today the president of our Center Ice Club, Mr. Bill Prout, that with your permission, we'd like to have speak on behalf of our boosters.
Who designed this place without a lobby for buying tickets? No, never mind. Okay. But one more question. Do we lose any parking here, Senator Clark, on this new designer?
No.
No. Mr. Chair, we don't.
And can you, Dr. Kurtz, can you just tell me about this? I wanted to ask you the last time about this. You have an athletic director's suite and a president's suite. What's in between?
I think that was the senator's suite and the president's suite that we had designed.
Economic development budget.
What's in between?
The rest of the suite is available to all our donors and booster club members.
Okay, and it's a dining area, or is it?
It can be used for any number of purposes. Certainly, there is dining capabilities. It would be big enough to handle any of those youth groups, those outside groups, convention centers that would want to come in and need those kind of facilities in order to bring their show to town.
Okay, Mr. Pro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, in the committee. My name is Bill Prout. I am a member of the business community in St. Cloud. I'm also have volunteered my time for over a decade with a 501c3 nonprofit corporation called the Center Ice Club, whose mission is to provide financial support for St. Cloud State men's and women's hockey. I'll keep my comments very brief. When this building was built in 1989, it was a state-of-the-art building at that time. It is now close to 20 years old and is the fourth oldest building in the WCHA. Michigan Tech, which has an older building, actually has undergone some renovations in the last few years, so they've even upgraded their building. I've had an opportunity to go to a lot of buildings across the country from New Hampshire, Vermont, Colorado, and there is not a single building that I've been into that does not at least have a ticket lobby. The building gets a great amount of use. It's a multi-use facility. I was even there last night at 10 o'clock playing hockey myself, so I'm a user of the facility as well. The building simply needs to have an upgrade, a facelift. It was, as mentioned, brought in under budget when it was originally built, and really is an older, tired building at this point in time. Really needs to have the amenities that will make it competitive with most of the other schools in the WCHA. So we hope, through your help, that money will be appropriated for the building. As president of the Center Ice Club, I'm here to tell you that we are ready, willing, and able to raise the additional $2 million that would be needed to complete the picture. And with this additional money, hopefully we can improve this building enough to keep it going for another 20 years. Thank you very much.
Mr. Prout, in the name of full disclosure, you have to tell people where you're from.
Well, I'm from Eveleth, and that explains a little bit of my involvement in the hockey program. And I have a little bias in the direction of hockey, but, you know, when the building was built in St. Cloud, it really was not much of a hockey town. This hockey program in St. Cloud, both the men and the women, have really brought a lot of excitement to our community. Our booster club is one of the largest in the country. We are one of the top 50 donors of all time to St. Cloud State University. We have 700 members in our group. It's a very very active, very supportive group. This is an important issue to St. Cloud, to the university, and we certainly hope to get your help to get this project completed.
Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions. First of all, any of the three witnesses at the table, or even Senator Clark, is this I see that you have expended, it looks like, $53,000. Is that correct in the one column here?
Yes.
And in prior years. And was that typically Minscu money, or how did it come to you? And and is the new proposal part of the Minscu proposal for a bonding that's going to be much larger than this?
Mr. Ludwig.
Mr. Chair and Senator Parasol, the $53,000 came from funds through our athletic department to do pre-design for the project. This project is part of our master plan and is part of our, has been included in our capital request with, through Minscu for the coming session next year. And however, it stands instead with all of the needs across the system in that context.
Go ahead.
That's the answer.
Okay. Thank you, because I know that Ms. Q is probably going to have a good-sized request from us for next year.
Dr. Kurtz, did you have something to say?
I did want to emphasize one other point. As athletic departments, indeed all higher education across the country, facing limited resources and trying to be more creative in generating additional revenue streams, the hockey program at St. Cloud State University funds the rest of the athletic program at our university. 21 sports, 500 young men and women have what they have available to them thanks to the revenue generated by a hockey program. And this would allow us not only to maintain, but obviously as tuition increases, as inflation eats away, provide those additional resources to stay competitive for all 21 of our sports.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming then that the Booster Club probably has been instrumental in getting you some of the dollars that, or will have more dollars to bring you.
I don't think any program around the state or around the country, athletic program, can survive without loyal supporters that are willing to dig deep and support those young men and women that work so hard to represent our university.
Senator Clark.
Thank you.
And to that point, Mr. Chair, I think one of the things that makes our Booster Club unique is it's not made up of a whole lot of people who are very wealthy. It's made up of average citizens who care so much about what's happening as it relates to hockey that they give a lot of time and they go the extra mile to try to figure out resources. We don't have, you know, an entity, a corporate entity, or other donors that have very deep pockets can help us with this, which is why $2 million for them is a pretty hefty commitment. The other thing I just wanted to point out is we talked about this a little bit in the bonding committee. Right now, we don't have a great way to figure out how to be enhancing facilities like this, doing renovations, or indeed sometimes building new when we're also having them compete with really important academic facilities. And Senator Perez, so that's one of the things I often think about because we want to make sure that we are thinking about how we are making sure our students are in the best facilities we can, and yet at the same time recognize that facilities such as this often draw people to the university that otherwise may not have been there, which is part of the reason why we're coming and talking about it this year.
Thank you.
Does the football field have a retractable roof on it?
It has a bubble that is used in the wintertime. It is not available during the playing season.
Okay. All right. Is any other questions from the members? Dr. Kurtz, I'll give you one last chance to – I assume you're sold out this weekend. So you can promote the weekend if you'd like.
And again, I pointed this out before to people. We have a series with the University of Minnesota this weekend, and let me just emphasize again that St. Cloud State is in the WCHA and has Division I hockey thanks to the loyal support of our good friends at the University of Minnesota. So we look forward to wonderful competition on the ice, but we're very good friends off the ice.
Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 292 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Clark.
Thank you.
Drive
so
carefully
much
on the way back. Oh, he's not here? Who's here? We've got Senjo. Steven, who's here?
Steven.
Senator Steven, are you here? Are you ready? You want to wait?
Senior
mailing.
Lynch is here.
Lynch is here.
We got Lynch. Senator Lynch, are you ready? Senator Lynch, are you ready?
Lynch, yes, Senator.
Okay. Step up to the plate. Yep.
Hey. We have the extras. It is. That's serious. You don't understand. You need to.
Senator Lynch, you know, normally when a freshman comes to the committee for the first time, they bring a round of something or other, you know. But.
I prefer brownies myself. I don't know about the rest of you.
Since you would send him, I guess that's
Senator Tomasoni, it's a pleasure to be here, members of the committee. I am really pleased to be here today with this project, and you have already heard me speak about the need and the importance of capitalizing on the assets that we have in our communities and in this great state. And the proposal that we bring to you today does just that. This is a project that I believe that you will see is not only good for our community, but is good for all Minnesota. One of the unique features of this project is that it has the potential, the ability to produce and create both national and international growth in our state. The bill is for design money to start the process of upgrading and expanding the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester. We are asking for $5.5 million to begin this process.
Thank you.
Expansion of the Civic Center will allow Rochester, will allow Southern Minnesota, and will in fact allow this state to really capitalize and capture some of the opportunities that are available surrounding the home of a major medical destination like the Mayo Clinic, certainly with the expansion of the University of Minnesota, Rochester, and the technology communities that we have in our community. With me today, my...
Are they brothers?
...colleague and cohort, Senator Senjum, who I've asked to come over and address you as well. Senator Senjum?
Senator Senjum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
You guys look like bookends there. With it.
That term has been used. Senator Tomasoni and members of the committee, I'll just maybe amplify a little bit on what Senator Lynch has pointed out. As you look at the city of Rochester, and frankly, if you go somewhat way back, believe it or not, before I was born, the Mayo Civic Center originally came into being in 1939. It was dedicated, it was a gift to the city from the Mayos, and it served well and continues to serve well in terms of the needs of our community, in fact, our greater community. In the early 90s, I believe it was 1992, there was sales tax authorization to build some substantial additions to the Civic Center, I believe in the neighborhood of $15 million at the time. And so the city undertook that through a local option sales tax, did that. And then in the late 90s, there was another $2.8 million worth of state bonding money, which was put into this facility. As we have moved forward as a community, and as medicine moves forward and as our community moves forward, it's obvious to us that are there that there are continuing needs to upgrade this facility, not only from the standpoint of what it contains in terms of the infrastructure, and I'm talking about the computer environment and the teaching environment, because this center is used a lot by Mayo and Mayo Foundation for medical education. As the medical center being what it is, there are a lot of members within the medical community there that are leaders with respect to their disciplines, be it neurology, be it orthopedic surgery, be it internal medicine, whatever it might be. And these people tend to bring their colleagues, if you will, within their organizations to a place like Mayo as part of their involvement in terms of the leadership within their organizations. And so we become a destination nationally and, for that matter, internationally for many of these groups. And as I mentioned earlier, in large part, these facilities or this activity takes place at Mayo Civic Center. Beyond that, Mr. Chair and members, we are a major sports center in terms of amateur sports. Our Amateur Sports Commission over the course of the last maybe 10 years have really emerged and has created within this facility and around Rochester many tournaments comprising of not only Midwest teams, but teams from across the country and in some cases across the world that will come to Rochester and participate in competition. So it's certainly good for the community. And if I could say one more thing, one of the reasons that we need to be in this business is that we in Rochester have a fairly sizable number of hotel rooms in really a relatively small community. 5,200 hotel rooms in a community of 100,000 people is somewhat unusual. And for the most part, those hotel rooms, were it not for this kind of activity, stand vacant over the weekends. And so in order for us to have a thriving hotel business, if you will, within Rochester, which fundamentally and first of all meets the needs of the patient, we have to have something going on in our community that fulfills the filling of those rooms on a weekend basis. And this kind of activity is really necessary and vital for our community from a standpoint of that totality, if you will. So, Madam Chair and members, I certainly urge support of this. It's a good project. It's needed. It will bring in many, many millions of dollars over the course of its life from people from outside of our state. And it will stand heavily in the area of education from the standpoint of the medical education and research. So with that, I would stand for any questions. I know we have the mayor here also to speak on behalf of this project. Mayor
Chairman Tomasoni.
One second. Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe Senator Lynch would like to answer, or either of the other witnesses. Are these highly colored both? Is this two levels of the same expansion, the highly colored compared to the pale?
Chairman Tomasoni.
Mayor Lynch.
Yes.
What I would like to offer before we get into questioning is if I could ask Mayor Ardell Brady and Brad Jones with the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau to just expand on upon our comments a little bit more. I think they can do that in a relatively brief manner, and then we'll take some questions.
Is that okay with you, Senator Parris?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm here for the duration, Mr. Chairman. Right. I'm glued to this chair every day.
Mayor Brady.
Committee after committee.
Chairman Tomasoni and committee members, thank you for the privilege of being able to address you this afternoon. I've had the honor of being the mayor of Rochester since 2003 and am here today to discuss our request for some state funding for the expansion of the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester. The brochure that we have distributed describes the project and the importance for Minnesota of this convention facility that's located in Rochester. As was just mentioned, Rochester has over 5,200 hotel rooms with space available for conventions. According to our information, this is the second most rooms in Minnesota. Only Minneapolis has more. We have over 11,000 employees that are in the hospitality industry, the second largest segment of our economy. Attracting convention visitors is vitally important to our economy and the economy of Minnesota, and it is our main priority at the Mayo Civic Center. We are the convention headquarters for southeastern Minnesota, northern Iowa, and southwestern Wisconsin. This proposed expansion, we believe, will greatly expand the convention business and stimulate economic growth in Minnesota, particularly in the area of medical conventions where we have a unique niche. This project is a $70 million expansion and renovation of the Mayo Civic Center. The facility will be expanded and updated with technology improvements to attract new business that we cannot accommodate in the current facilities. The main additions are additional meeting rooms, banquet space, and technological improvements. And we are seeking design funds only in 2007. That's that $5.5 million. And at this point, I'd like to ask Brad Jones, who is the executive director of the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau, to briefly describe the conventions we cannot accommodate currently and the Mayo Civic Center deficiencies that we intend to address in some new conventions we could attract with the completion of this project. Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your time. I'll be brief. Rochester is really a vibrant and growing market, as many of you know. Our convention and meetings segment of our economy is big, and it's growing. In the last 2 years, we've expanded that. We've increased it about 35%. Our Mayo Civic Center and our convention facilities are literally bursting at the seams. I've compiled a list for you of our lost business in 2005 and 2006. We've lost events primarily due to inadequate facilities and date availability. With the expansion, proposed expansion, we would have been able to accommodate all of these groups. There's 92,000 attendees that would have come to town with these groups. And the direct spending would have been $42 million. The last figure, the lost spending to Minnesota, represents a figure of $28 million that went to other states, meaning that the event did not stay in Minnesota. It went to other states around our nation. The other flyer that's included is our top 50 medical meetings and opportunities with an expansion. If we were to have such expansion, we would be able to approach these groups with a member of our medical institutions and have them consider a conference in Minnesota and Rochester specifically. These top 50, and I will say that this is just a ripple of what is out there in this industry. The medical segment is growing by leaps and bounds, and we have a very unique opportunity to capitalize on it. There's 135,000 attendees that attend these 50 meetings that represent about $59 million in spending that we could potentially bring to this state and to Rochester. The other thing I may mention is that Rochester is really event ready. We have a unique infrastructure with parking, with hotel rooms, with restaurants, and ramps, and most importantly, employees that know how to treat visitors that come to town. So we're really event ready with an expansion like this. We won't require any additional infrastructure around town. We can plug into what we have. We have 2,000 hotel rooms connected to the Civic Center, which, as you know, is very important. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
And you can walk everywhere. You forgot to mention that.
Yeah, that's right.
What is the American National Cattle Women's Inc.?
there is a, as many of you know, there is a group for just about any hobby or profession. These ladies are cattle.
Women, not women.
Ladies. I'm sorry, are in the cattle industry, and we had the opportunity to bring them in, and we lost them. I believe we lost them to somewhere in Illinois.
Senator Parasol, you had a question.
No, Mr. Chairman, I just thought maybe that was pretty obvious by their titling. And I don't think they're the auxiliary. I think they're the real thing.
The real deal.
As soon as we get that convention, we'll make sure Brad invites you.
Yes.
No, but you still had a question earlier, Senator Parasol. Do you still
want to
ask that
question?
Oh,
it's about the diagram that we have on this sheet, if the highly colored ones are the expansion you're looking for.
That's true.
Two different levels.
Here. We have Donna Drews, our manager of the Mayo Civic Center, here, and maybe if there's some specific questions to any of this, we could do that.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the time you've given to us today.
Ms. Drews, say your name.
My name is Donna Drews. I'm the executive director of the Mayo Civic Center. And in response to your question, Senator, yes, that is a two-story addition. And we are looking at adding approximately 190,000 square feet to the existing Civic Center.
Will you, with this space, will you be able to accommodate those missed opportunities?
Yes, we will.
And the pre-design is done, I take it. We're in the design phase now, right?
That is correct. We do have pre-design work. We are looking for funds to pay for the actual design work.
And then the $70 million, where's that coming from? Or what are you planning on there as far as?
The $70 million, we are requesting that half of that come from the state. The other half will be provided by the local taxpayers.
Is Mayo participating in this at all, or just as a taxpayer, or will there be private donations, other types of things going on?
Mayo has not made any financial commitments to date. However, they are very involved in the planning process.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Any further comments? Senator Lynch? Okay. Senator Lynch, we're going to lay this over. This will go to the get recommended to go to the bonding committee, and this is one of the necessary stops before it gets there. So we'll lay this over, and thank you very much for coming to the committee. And
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Solon? Senator Solon, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to renew our request for state financial support to build a new arena at the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center in Duluth, naturally. At the end of last month, Duluth Mayor Herb Bergson, officials from the DEC, and I presented the project before Senator Lanxess' Capital Investment Committee. And here we are seeking approval of the Economic Development Budget Division for this year's supplemental bonding bill.
You don't have any little fans or anything?
We don't have anything like that. We're poor. We're asking for your support.
Let's move on to the next one. With no fans.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We'll send you a nice thank you note. 2007 marks the third year that we've been discussing this issue at the Capitol. Last year, state matching funds for the DEC Arena was one of the last items to fall off the table as we were wrapping up the bonding bill. And this year, we are hopeful that the stars have lined up and that we will be granted state funding. We received some good news last month when Governor Pawlenty indicated his support for the project in his capital budget. Many of you have had the opportunity to see the DEC facility and to hear about the planned improvements over the past 2 years. We are here to review this project for our more senior members and to inform our newer members about the request. and to stand for questions. And I have with me three witnesses. I have Duluth Mayor Herb Bergson, and then I have Mark Emmel, who is the chair of the DEC board, and Dan Russell, who is the executive director of the board. And all of the witnesses will speak briefly on the project, and then we'll stand for any questions that you might have.
Members, just so you know, this place is so old that I played in it. Wow. Here, are you first?
It is, it's the oldest in the WCHA.
I wasn't aware it was that old.
It's old. That's old. Yeah.
I want to open.
Mayor, be careful here now because I got the gavel.
I want to open with an apology for the shabby way the UMD women's team treated the Gophers this past weekend. Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Herb Bergson, Mayor of the City of Duluth. I'm here to stress the city's strong support for the DEC Arena project. The Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center is the centerpiece of our downtown business and entertainment district. The new arena will greatly enhance this asset and increase its value to our community, to our region, and, of course, to our state. We know the new arena will be a tremendous benefit to our community and our region. This enhanced facility will also provide benefits to the state as more concerts and more conventions will come to Duluth rather than similarly sized facilities in the upper Midwest. The city is prepared to match the state funds dollar for dollar. The key component to the local funding package is a 0.75% increase in the city's food and beverage tax. The citizens of Duluth voted 61% to 39% in favor of dedicating that revenue from this local options tax to meet a large portion of the local match for this project. My administration and the City Council renewed our formal support for this initiative just before the start of your 2007 session. We have strong support throughout the community, unanimous support of the Council, and the support of the City Administration on this important project. We appreciate all of the time and attention you have given to this issue over the last couple of legislative sessions. We hope this is the year to get the project done, and we will provide whatever information the committee might need to support this initiative. I'll call on, as our next speaker, Mark Emmel, the chair of the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center Board.
Mayor, is the referendum still valid?
Well, it was an advisory referendum.
It didn't expire or anything?
Oh, no.
Just an advisory referendum, so it didn't okay.
No, but Mr. Chair, the important thing is, though, that the referendum will not be sufficient to cover the necessary funds if we do not get funding this year.
The amount that it's projected to produce?
Right.
Okay. Mr. Emmel?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Emmel. I'm president of Labovitz Enterprises in Duluth. We own and operate the Holiday Inn, and I'm currently the chair of the DEC Board of Directors. This project, the DEC Arena project, is important not only to Duluth but the entire region. As a DEC MORE member and representative of the Duluth Business and Hospitality Committee, I want to share with you that this has wide and strong support. The Duluth Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors voted unanimously in support of this project, and it's not very often that the chamber membership votes in support of a tax increase, which is part of the funding mechanism. Visit Duluth Board of Directors also voted unanimously, and the Duluth Chamber of Commerce polled its members, and 97% of its membership approved of moving forward with this project. The DEC staff and the DEC Board of Directors has been working on this for more than 3 years, and approximately 2 years ago, the DEC Board hired the design team of HOK and Stanius Johnson to move forward with this project. So if we are successful and receive legislative approval this year, the DEC Board and staff are ready to move forward and begin construction this summer. Dan Russell will provide you with an overview of the project, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions that you would have.
Thank you.
Mr. Russell.
Senator Tomasoni, members of the committee, I did have an opportunity to pass around an update prepared for this year's group of legislators on the project. And basically, the project is the same one that was outlined during the last legislative session. But something I didn't think received enough attention, which is very important to us, is we have a goal, and we will achieve it, to make this the first leadership and energy design facility arena in the world. The design team has been on board from the start on this. It complements some of our other activities at the DEC as far as really being at the forefront of the environmental use of a facility like ours. We have all recyclable materials. We heat our facility totally with waste heat, with some innovative technology that we installed last year. So it's very important, and it's a goal that I think fits in well with some other initiatives on a state level, and we're very proud that we truly believe that we will have the first LEED certified arena, not only in the country but in the world. It's an exciting project. Something that wasn't pointed out is that we have a project labor agreement in effect with our local trades. This will be built with local union people. 90% of the 300 workers that are projected to work on this facility will be from the immediate area. And finally, it is a regional facility. The DEC is a facility that serves much more than just Duluth. For any given event, entertainment event, which is a key component of this, over 70% of the people looking through Ticketmaster reports are from outside the area. So it is a regional center. So with that, we certainly would like to answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions? UMD, what is their contribution exactly?
Senator Tomasoni, members of the committee, the University of Minnesota Duluth and the University of Minnesota are key partners in this. Their contribution is $455,000 the first year towards the local match, and that will increase 3% per year over the terms of the bonds, bringing it up to a total commitment of over $16 million. There was some discussion in Duluth in previous years of a separate facility on campus, and we have a limited demographic area. You can look around just around the neighborhood and see where that's happened with devastating effects on the existing facility. The Cole Center, beautiful facility, was built, but the Dane County Coliseum really is empty now. In Grand Forks, they had, as part of their renewal after their disasters, the Alaris Center, and Engelstad came along, bigger, more capacity. So communities our size really have a rough time supporting two facilities. With that, UMD, I think, very graciously came forward and said, we want to partner with the city of Duluth. Let's come up, combine our resources, come up with a facility, continue hockey in downtown, which is unique, Duluth, and has really stepped forward. And they are a key player. Their athletic director was on the design selection committee team, and the vice chancellor, Greg Fox, is a member of the building committee. So there's a wonderful real relationship there.
Are revenues from the hockey games part of the UMD's contribution? Is that how they're doing it, or is that?
Senator Tomasoni, their contribution will totally be made from the extra income that the additional capacity and revenue streams from a new facility will bring. As we are pointed out, Minnesota has some of the newest and some of the oldest WCHA facilities. Our facility is, as you pointed out, is over 40 years old and is by far the smallest ice size rink capacity, in the league.
40 years. Senator Metzen, did you play there?
You know, I was just going to comment. this is embarrassing, but I'm so old that I played in the curling club.
It would be Two Harbors.
No. It was what he called it, were they curling?
Yeah.
But that was 60.
But they played hockey there, too.
61, 62, 63.
See, I never played there, so I'm really young.
We'd have busloads from South St. Paul would go up to play Duluth East. And they'd start at Woog's Tavern downtown South St. Paul. And they were 300-400 people, and they were gassed by the time they got on the bus. And every year, some spectator from South St. Paul would fall over the land on the ice, and nobody got hurt or killed. But every year I played up there, somebody really fell because of the whiskey on the bus on the way up from Woog's bowling.
So we played
with Dougie Woog, the coach, and I played up there a couple against Duluth East, but that is old, isn't it?
Too much information. Senator Solon.
Senator, that wasn't too much information, was it?
Chair Tomasoni and Senator Matson, No, I don't think so. That
yeah, you got my vote.
Yeah, because
right.
Because when I was in high school, I also watched hockey games at that facility. It now has been torn down.
How old are you?
It was by never mind.
Mr. Chairman, you
older
add,
than you.
He adds all this color commentary, and I see something, and it's too much.
Yeah. It's great being the chair. Huh?
That's right.
Senator Solon, I'm assuming that the food and beverage tax expires when the bonds are paid off, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and have you guys done any studies? Rochester people were just in with a bunch of numbers about all the conventions they missed out on because they didn't have enough space. Do you have the same kind of experiences?
Senator Tomasoni, I think their arguments are very valid, and there is a benefit to the state. The DEC is a state authority. I think that's with four appointees by the governor and seven by Mayor Bergson.
Yeah, but I mean, have you experienced the same?
We have.
Yeah.
We have. We're losing off convention business. We kind of concentrate on hockey because of the University of Minnesota Duluth partnership. But this will allow us to do bigger trade shows, attract more conventions. Our numbers are in the same boat. Minnesota is losing out in conventions. And revenue. The DEC alone last year paid over $622,000 in state sales tax. A lot of those dollars are out of state dollars that are new dollars into the coffers.
Any further questions? Any further comments? Seeing none, Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 57, this is one we're going to move to the Finance Committee, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion's adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Senator Sieben. Welcome to the committee, Senator Sieben.
You hold a bigger gavel, so you remember that.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni and members of the committee. I'm very pleased and honored to be carrying this bill, Senate File 625, which would appropriate $9 million for the continuation of the implementation of the Union Depot. The Union Depot, as members probably already know, and there's a sheet being passed around, will be the major transit hub for St. Paul, the eastern metropolitan area, and also a major transit hub for the state of Minnesota. It will serve as the hub for many transit destinations, including the Central Corridor, which, as members know, is light rail connecting St. Paul and Minneapolis. It will serve as the transit hub for the Met Transit and other bus lines. Hopefully the Rush Line, which will be the transit, a passenger rail corridor between Duluth and St. Paul. The Red Rock Corridor, which would originate in Hastings and travel up to St. Paul. And the high-speed rail line, which is high-speed rail between Chicago and St. Paul. So this $9 million appropriation would take care of the remaining 80-20 split that the federal government gave appropriated to this project in the safety lieu bill that passed last year. So in other words, they appropriated $50 million for the project for property acquisition and some design money, and this $9 million will finish the state's 20% share. In the 2006 bonding bill, there was $3.5 million appropriated to this project. So I'm honored today to have Ramsey County Commissioner Rafael Ortega here to speak on behalf of the project, and also Ryan Rutzik, who is from the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce.
Commissioner, you want to go first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity. I think Senator Sieben did a very good job of covering all the bases. If there's another line she's left out last year, I believe the Robert Street Corridor was given about $500,000, and that would go from Rosemont to the Union Depot. I think what that indicates is that the Union Depot is becoming more and more a catalyst for a large part of the region in terms of their own development as we get this huge growth in the Dakota and Washington County that's occurring and into Hudson. Ramsey County has been working on the Union Depot for about 4 or 5 years now, and I can tell you that we are, and I say this quite honestly and sincerely, after many years of negotiations and many changes in the administration of the post office, and it's a little bit like dealing, I think, with the Pentagon or something like that. I mean, it's incredible. I couldn't describe it to you, but we actually have, we're not very far from a purchase agreement, and we are ready to start working on that depot the moment we purchase it. The concourse and the office tower building, which has all the property there. We've already purchased all the property, most of the property around the depot that's not owned by the post office, and we've expended about $5.2 million acquiring that property. We are purchasing the rest of the property that's needed besides the post office, roughly in the neighborhood of another $4 million, $5 million. And so we will have, completed purchasing all the property that we need to start working on the depot. We're going to have to go through an EIS, an environmental impact statement, and jump some federal hoops. But once we get that done, and we've been working with them to move on that quickly, once we purchase the building, we could be working on the concourse this time next year. And of course, that gives us access to the federal dollars, the $50 million.
Mr. Rutzik.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to testify in front of you today. My name is Ryan Rutzik. My family owns and operates All Incorporated. We're a regional kitchen appliance and cabinet distribution company headquartered in St. Paul. Here today as chair of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce Transportation Policy Committee to speak in favor of Senate File 625. With over 2,200 business members throughout the East Metro area, the Chamber has long been in support of the establishment of the Union Depot as a multimodal transportation hub. As members may know, our number one policy priority is the development of the Central Corridor LRT. We also support development of the Rush Line, the Red Rock Corridor, and the Robert Street Corridors. All these lines are planned to come together and connect at the Union Depot site. Union Depot takes the multimodal approach to the next level, and we ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the committee? What kind of condominiums are we looking at here? Are they?
Excuse me?
It says construction of condominiums are underway. Are they affordable housing? What kind of condominiums?
Well, they're talking about the head house. What Crystal says, thank you, Senator. What people consider the Union Depot is the head house, but behind the head house, I don't know how many of you went to the Titanic showing. There's a beautiful, beautiful building that's literally been mothballed for 30, 40 years. It is it's a piece of art in itself. That is the concourse. Below that is where all the trains used to come in and where the tracks used to be. So for us, what's critical for the multimodal is the concourse and all that property that gives us access for high-speed rail and for Amtrak. The head house is under private ownership, and the county board like the fact that there will be a private-public existence there, and we would purchase a right-of-way. We're negotiating with them for a right-of-way because they would like to have people come through the depot. He is building the owner is building condos. They tend to be it's not affordable housing. They're condominiums, but they tend to be lower-end condominiums.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, just to be clear, this picture that's on the left-hand side of the page, that is where Leanne Chin used to be, and Christo's still there. Oh, they just left. Sorry. So the condominiums are being developed privately in that section, but the actual where the we should start thinking about where the Union Depot will be is this facility that's just beyond it that you can't really see from the front roadway here, but is where the old terminal is in this center picture.
Okay. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, this is just such a natural. All the spokes seem to come together here at the Union Depot. I mean, the Central Corridor, the Duluth proposal, the Red Rock, the Robert Street Corridor, the Hiawatha Line, the St. Cloud. I mean, they all are going to meet here, and that hubcap will be there. Get all these spokes into there, and it's going to be a wonderful. I dare say I don't think there was a great deal of planning at all of this, but if you look now, it's all going to work. Does that make sense? I mean, nobody 30 years ago said this thing is going to all pull together, but now you look at it today, and it's just a natural. It's got, you know, and that someday that Chicago line coming up here, I mean, just so interesting. Then you got buses, you got bicycles, you got everything coming in here. So, and by the way, when they plan the new Lafayette Bridge, Commissioner and others, make sure that they have a space there for the rail to get across there. See, they're going to do a new deck in the Lafayette.
They're going to build a whole new bridge.
Yeah, but they've got to have that line on there, see.
Senator Metzen's our in-resident architect.
Well, the Senate is correct. I mean, the Lafayette Bridge is going to be very important to the depot, too, because once we use the property for the rails and to renovate the concourse back, and senators, there will be something in the neighborhood of 8 tracks for all kinds, heavy and light rail, coming under the concourse so folks could literally go from platform to platform. But aside from that, we're looking that the property that we then don't need once the rail is constructed, that goes back to for development, economic development in terms of that part of town which has a vision. And Lower Town is also looking at the day the depot is done, so the access to the river for our folks, and not just for the people of St. Paul, but everybody that comes to St. Paul from the state. Right now, there's no access to the river. The other thing is that the Lafayette Bridge plays a critical role because we can really now make a difference in terms of not only making sure it is wide enough or has the potential of adding rail on that in the future, but also how it accesses to 35E and how it comes into the depot and so forth. I mean, there's wonderful opportunities here if we can make them all sort of dovetail into each other.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree. This is, you know, I agree with President Metzen that this makes a ton of sense. I assume, Commissioner Ortega, that the $9 million is the local match for the $50 million in the safety loop bill that's coming down. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, and also the money we've expended, Senator Dibble, in purchasing the properties from the private owners will also be counted as a match,
great,
even though
great.
We've already expended those dollars.
Excellent. Well, Mr. Chair, thanks. I'm glad that the Lafayette Bridge was brought up and all these other facilities that are envisioned to come in to the Union Depot. And the Union Depot clearly serves as a turnkey for a lot of these things. However, I will say that, you know, unless we do something differently around here in the near future and in the long term, you know, I don't hold a lot of hope for any of these things coming online in any time that would matter to us. Sitting around the table, we'll be old and gray or long gone by the time we see Lafayette Bridge built or by the time we see any of these facilities come online, because it takes this you know, titanic, monumental political effort to occupy that much space in each of our bonding bills, because we're not putting the money aside on a regular, rational basis, in order to qualify for the capital expense that we're talking about for Red Rock or Central Corridor or Rush Line or High Speed Rail. unlike what so many other cities do, which, you know, is raising a little bit of money over time, putting that money aside, and then qualifying for these federal matching dollars. And we're not even beginning to talk about what it's going to take to operate all of these facilities. And we clearly are in no position to operate all of these transit facilities and maintain a bus system and do all these things. And when it comes to the Lafayette Bridge, that's, you know, a mega project. I think that's north of, you know, $200 or $300 million, maybe $400 million to rebuild that whole bridge. It's a long bridge. You know, it spans a big long river valley there. And we did embark on a process of setting aside money for these mega projects so that particular transportation districts could, you know, we wouldn't swamp their entire budget, you know, in a given year or across a number of years. Lafayette Bridge, I think, was the first one fingered for one of those mega projects, you know, and we're raiding even that pot of money to do things like the crosstown and other stuff. So while I'm enthusiastically supportive, of course, of doing these capital investments, we have got to take a look at how we're going to continue to build these facilities and then operate them. So that's a conversation, of course, for Senator Murphy's, but I have to make the speech wherever I can.
You know, that's the second time I heard somebody say the Titanic, and, you know, you guys know that the company that built the Titanic built two other ships, and all three of them sunk.
And, Mr. Chair, were they from the range?
No. Commissioner Ortega. No.
It was steel from the range, right?
Commissioner Ortega.
Could I quickly respond to Senator Dibble? Yeah, these are all huge, especially Lafayette Bridge. But I raise it because I think it's smart of us to keep those in horizon. They're not all going to be done at the same time, but we could do some pretty good planning so we're not taking down what we built 10 years ago. And we tend to do a lot of that, too. And that doesn't save us any money. But in terms of the depot, I got to tell you that, number one, the depot is going to be a facility that's going to be owned and operated by Ramsey County. We've been preparing for this financially, and we are prepared to handle the operation of the Union Depot and put up our local share to match the federal dollars. And it is important. And, you know, it was not an accident. When we were working on, you know, we bought the right-of-ways to Rush Line and Red. All of those were bought a long time ago, but the hub was obviously what we were missing to link everything up. And so it was very much intentional when we went to go after the concourse and to deal with the post office, which is a monumental task in itself. And once we purchase, I could assure you that we will be, and that looks like it's 9 months away at most, we will be in that facility, moving through the steps, and we probably could have Amtrak there before the center corridor is even constructed.
Senator Dibble, follow up.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. The leadership of the county, of all the counties, in Ramsey County in this instance, the Metro Transit Waste Development Board has been outstanding. You know, my comments are more for other stakeholders and other partners, you know, to name names, you know, our good friends at the chamber, maybe not the local chambers, but, everyone's for all these great things. And it's easy to be for them, you know, if they're 20, 30, 40 years out. But, you know, there's no one is coming forward with a plan to pay for them, either the capital on a reasonable time frame or operating. And that's what's got to change.
Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think very fondly of the depot because I used the train back and forth to Chicago for several years, and St. Paul was my hometown, and so I'm hoping that when the building is done, that we don't have the facade. That we don't have the nature of the old building gone. That there will be preservation of the nature of that building because those old depots are so few and far between anymore. As long as it's secure and you know, strong enough, I hope that the nature of that building will be preserved and built around with other kinds of facilities in the same mode of styling, of the era of its styling. I'm not sure what you have planned, but I really, and there aren't that many people around today who remember being in and out of that building a lot. I'm one of them.
Senator, that building in itself, I wish we could, taking the board on, it's a piece of art.
It's a treasure.
You couldn't get that kind of craftsmanship to do the wall reliefs, just the whole building, the inside of it. It's a work of art. We have no intentions. We intend to enhance it in its historic, maintain its historic nature, and anything else we do complements that historic nature.
I'm glad to hear that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Pearsall. It's a lot like the European, the beautiful European train
station.
They
were all over the country like that, but I'm not sure how many
Senator Stephen?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pearsall, I think it's also similar to Union Station, if you've ever been in the restored Union Station in Washington, D.C. There was talk, I think in the 1960s, about tearing that entire train station down, but instead they led an effort to restore it, and it is really one of the gems of Washington, D.C., so that's a similar vision that we have for the Union Depot.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just on the next maps, would you get them to put in the Capitol Corridor, the Robert Street Corridor, when you put them all up, straight forward? I don't know who's in charge of that. Raphael, you could handle that one.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Grab one of these. I want to see our new corridor there at least proposed.
This doesn't go down
I'll make sure we scrap the old maps. How's that?
Yes.
Print some new ones.
So you're on the tape now.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. President, we didn't unfortunately didn't really look at this too closely ahead of time because also there isn't the high-speed rail route on here either, which is
Chicago.
Is really important to my area.
Geez, we just want one train up north. Jeez. Anyway.
That's part of this thing. Up to Duluth.
We used to have the same train went right up to Duluth.
Yeah, no one rides this train. Anyway, okay. Any further comments by the committee? Mm-hmm. Okay, Senator Stephen, we're going to lay this over for a recommendation to the bonding committee. Okay? All right. Thank you very much.
We'll get a spur to Chisholm.
Senator Rosen.
She was hiding behind the
tracks.
Are you alone? You're the only one that really knows the project?
Mr. Chair, my mayor of the community, his daughter had operation today.
Ah, okay.
So I'm winging it.
Okay. We'll go easy on you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate this opportunity to be before you with Senate File 396. And although the dollar amount is very small compared to probably what you've been listening to all day, it is truly very important to the community of Ceylon and its 413 people population down there. It's a community south of Fairmont, and it's had its struggles. Back in 96, the school closed. In 2002, the grocery store closed. And then a week later, the VFW burnt down. But they are troopers down there, and they are working very hard to revitalize their community. And they are they rebuilt the Legion, and they're in the final running for a housing redevelopment grant through DEED. So basically, I'm before you asking for $18,000 for them to continue on with their emphasis, their niche market that they found in that community, and that's recreation in the scope of softball leagues. And they have already the city has pledged $11,000 to the $29,000 price tag of this. They just need more space, and they are they have about 230 people that come to this small community every week for their recreation of softball, and it's quite a big deal. So I would appreciate it if you just take a look at this, Mr. Chair and members, and give the birthplace of Walter Mondale a chance to keep going. I have to get that in. Thank you. But I tell you what, the spirit in Ceylon is strong. And
How big is Ceylon?
413 people. And 20% of the population is at or below poverty level. But they have a huge volunteer system. The city is working very hard. And like I said, they rebuilt the VFW.
And there's 230 people. Is a softball league that comes?
No, all the communities from around go to Ceylon for their softball leagues during the summer.
Okay.
And so they just need more lighting for one more field to extend their...
How many fields are there now?
Two, but one with lights.
Senator Fischbach, do you have a comment?
No.
Any further comments by the committee? That was easy.
That was very easy, and I really do appreciate you hearing
this, is good
hearing
because
this bill.
I got a softball field. This
I'd be happy to move it, Mr. Chairman.
I may have an amendment one of these days. Okay, thank you, Senator Rosen. We're going to lay this over for recommendation to the bonding committee.
Thank you very much, okay, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Are you guys all waiting for Senator Sotvier? Is he close?
I think I'm going to get out of this chair for the first time in 3 hours.
You guys can go ahead and go up to the table and maybe we'll get started without him.
This is a cola.
Can we do that?
There's no cola.
We can do that, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. He's just about here, so.
They have stuff they need to hand out.
Senator Schott, welcome to the committee.
Sit on the floor. Set up for your fan.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Chair,
for
hearing our proposal today. The Springbrook Nature Center proposal is a project kind of similar is in a same or similar boat as the Duluth Convention Center is with respect to our approach this bonding cycle. That is because the Springbrook project was part of last year's bonding proposal in the Senate, all the way up until the very last conference committee proposal, and then was in the very last offer was dropped, much like the deck was. Also, a couple of years ago, the city of Fridley passed a referendum to raise our property taxes to support the Springbrook Nature Center. What you'll see from the proposal is that the Springbrook Nature Center is a statewide asset that provides environmental education to students from all across the state of Minnesota. In fact, we have other pushpin maps for the entire country as well as the entire world. So there are thousands upon thousands of students that receive their environmental education at Springbrook Nature Center. The Springbrook Nature Center was recently named as one of the top 8 birding areas by the Audubon Society in the state of Minnesota. But we're going to hear more details regarding Springbrook from our local Fridley folks. But just as an aside, the Nature Center is of personal importance to me because before its present location, it was located a half a block from where I grew up. And my brother, who's in the Air Force now, volunteered there as an elementary school once a week. In fact, it was with Cy Sinclair that he did that. So it's Springbrook is very close to my heart and our family's heart in terms of our upbringing. And in fact, my brother has stated that his experience at Springbrook played an important role in his being accepted to the Air Force Academy and being currently a pilot in the U.S. Air Force. With that, I'll introduce
Senator Mayor. Schneider, is this just a summertime thing, or is it year-round?
Year-round.
Year-round. Okay.
Yep. Mayor Scott Lund from the city of Fridley.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm here today to lend my support, not only as a mayor, but for my entire constituency. We have recently, a couple years ago, passed, as the senator mentioned, a permanent levy referendum by voter approval for the continuance in perpetuity of Springbrook Nature Center. As the pressures of a first-ring suburb, where developers are constantly wanting to allocate or use a 128-acre preserve that is quite unique to the entire region, we're trying to continue that preservation And not only that, through an enhancement, we feel that it has economic, we know that it has great economic benefit to our community. It is not just a city park. It is of regional nature. And as the Senator alluded to, we have visitors from all over the world go to Springbrook Nature Center. If the senators in this room have not been to Springbrook Nature Center, it just tells you that it is one of the best-kept secrets in the metro area and Fridley as well. And even with that, we have many thousands of visitors to that area. Our business community, time and time again, comes to me and asks for a place set aside for mini seminars, conferences. Unity Hospital is one. The world headquarters of Medtronics, another one. They go outside of our area because we don't have those types of facilities to accommodate them. And we think we can do both. We can accommodate more visitors and still preserve the ecology there in the Nature Center by use of these funds that we're asking for here today. Again, I want to show support, too, for the all-volunteer foundation, Springbrook Nature Center Foundation, who has taken on this very ambitious project to raise additional funds over and above the request here today. So, again, my support, and I'll pass this on to the foundation chair, Malcolm Mitchell.
Welcome, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As indicated, my name is Malcolm Mitchell. I'm the chair of the Springbrook Nature Center Foundation. We are, for lack of a better term, one of the a Friends of Springbrook organization. Our mission is to enhance and protect Springbrook Nature Center and work collaboratively in partnership with the city to make and enhance this particular amenity and, as we think, jewel that's been some of the best-kept secrets in our region for a long time. Beginning in 2000, about the year 2000, we as a board, along with Sia and the staff at the Springbrook Nature Center, began to analyze our situation and the recognition that visitorship was growing immensely, and some of that was having negative impact on the environment in Springbrook. And so we began to look at ways we can improve that and both enhance the Nature Center, but at the same time project and protect a majority of the center for in its is clearly related to its natural area. So out of that, history came, and with the referendum passed, came what we call the Spring Project, which is sanctuary protection into the next generation, sanctuary protection and renewal into the next generation. And so we're here today to ask for $2.5 million of state money. We, as a Springbrook Nature Center Foundation, will do the heavy lifting to raise a similar pot of money from private donations and private activities so that together we have a $5 million project. And that's really the commitment I make with you today, is that we as a foundation board, a totally volunteer group of people from the region around Springbrook, who will work to do that heavy lifting and complete this project with the help of the funds from the state. Thank you.
Mr. Mitchell, so you're going to match the $2.5 with another $2.5?
We're going to try our very best to do that, yes.
And most of the bills we had in here before said something about design or pre-design. Have you got the design all done and everything that you want to do?
We have some concepts all done. We do not have the pre-design in the sense of any our kind of real design, actual drawings. But the concept, which Sia is going to talk with you, is some of the pre-design work that we've done.
So will this money be used for that, or?
This money in part would be used for that as well as moving forward on the actual building.
Okay. All right. Mr. St. Clair.
Hi. Thank you for having us here today. I'm Sia St. Clair, Mr. Chair, Senators, and I'm director of Springbrook Nature Center. I've been there for 29 years and have quite a bit of history with what's going on. I'm going to show you real quick some aspects of what Springbrook is and how it works. Springbrook is one of the It is the largest natural area park as you come north out of Minneapolis, and it has tremendously diverse native habitats there for a small park, 127 acres. And because it has all those diverse natural areas, native prairie, native uplands, native wetlands, it has tremendous diversity of plant life and wildlife as well. And it is that diversity of wildlife and plant life that we have there that ends up bringing in along with it, and Malcolm and the mayor was saying that the best kept secret, I think we the staff have decided that the secret got out. because we have tremendous numbers of people coming to the center, and that's why we're here today, is to talk about the potential of having so many people that were loving this park to death. Springbrook Nature Center is a very popular destination. It educates thousands. We have large community events there for people coming throughout the Twin Cities. We have a lot of teen programs and teen volunteer activities where we motivate teens to positive life values. We have health and wellness programs that we work with in partnership with area hospitals, working with cardiac care patients and cancer patients at different times, different health wellness programs with these programs, volunteer groups. We have a tremendously large and diverse volunteer program. Last year we had over 600 volunteers and 16,000 volunteer hours, the equivalent of more than 8 full-time people, along with being a haven for wildlife. So this is a little bit about what Springbrook is and what goes on there. It's an extremely accessible park, and that's one of the reasons that we have so many people coming there. You can get there by car very easily from interstates, from 694, from 610 Bridge, which is about a mile away from us. There's going to be a bicycle trail built with ICE-T grant funds from federal government this coming summer. Across our northern boundary, which will connect up regional trail on the west side of the park and another trail on the east side of the park. We have the North Star Commuter Rail is our entire western boundary, and there'll be a substation shortly just north of us where people could get off so they could come to us from Commuter Rail. The Metro Bus has a hub at Northtown Shopping Center, and so there are a lot of bus routes that go right past, and there's a bus stop right in front of our driveway in front of the park. So we have people coming that way. We have 6 different entrances where people are coming into the park. So we have many different ways and an extremely accessible area for the people to be able to get into us. Obviously, as you've seen, as Malcolm has mentioned, from people signing in our guest book, we have people from communities all over the state. Over 350 communities have signed our guest book in recent years, all 50 states, over 60 foreign countries. These are not people that necessarily come there. We don't have people flying into Minneapolis from Australia just to see Springbrook Nature Center. But what happens is that it's a place where if people have people from out of town coming, people have relatives coming, this is a place where they bring them to, because it's such a pleasant place for them to enjoy and appreciate with whether it's business or family friends that are coming into town. Our program base, the people that are coming in for the many different public programs, community groups within the communities, as well as school programs, coming from over 60 communities into this program area at Springbrook Nature Center that we have. Here's an example, just the public and private school groups that we've had in the last couple of years, the communities that we've had, 38 different communities where groups are coming to the center to enjoy the environmental education programming activities that we have there during the school year. Springbrook is unique in a number of different ways. It has this diverse natural habitat and wildlife. Minnesota Volunteer Magazine a couple of years ago highlighted areas that were unique and very special areas to view wildlife in the Twin Cities, and Springbrook was the only nature center that was listed as a place like that. The National Audubon Society has this new international program where they're designating important bird areas, and Springbrook was one of the first 8 that was listed in Minnesota. Again, the only nature center that was listed that way. Over 650 diverse programs throughout the year, all different kinds of audiences, hunters, hunter education programs that we do there, the programs for kids, senior citizen programs. We just finished, we have a very unique wetland system that runs almost directly into the Mississippi River, immediately upstream from the intakes for St. Paul and Minneapolis for the water intakes for those communities. And we've just reestablished those wetlands and have some rare species nesting there last year again for the first time in about 15 years. As I said, Springbrook is extremely accessible. We have some unique educational
partnerships. We have a program with a local school district where we see every kindergarten through eighth grade student four times a year throughout the entire district. We've just started a school in Anoka Hennepin District where we're doing that, another one in Columbia Heights where we're doing that. Springbrook 25 years ago was set up for a green energy design, energy efficient design. It's an underground interpretive center, completely underground. So it is, we've started that way. We're intending with this program that we're talking about to continue that in a very big way. Springbrook attracts property owners. Realtors have told us they use Springbrook as a talking point when they're bringing people in for both businesses and for homeowners coming into the community. As I mentioned, the health and wellness opportunities and the volunteer opportunities that we have at Springbrook. This all of these unique aspects bring an awful lot of people to Springbrook and has made us look to the future and try to figure out how we're going to handle all of these large numbers of people increasing. The Metropolitan Council has stated that they expect the area around Springbrook Nature Center to increase over the next 20 years by in population by over 25%. So we're looking at how can we sustain the fragile natural ecosystems that exist in Springbrook while we have these new and more people attending. In an aerial photo, what we're looking at for our spring project, a sanctuary protection and renewal into the next generation, is to take about 5% of the site and develop it intensely. It's the area that's already been developed. It's has the parking lot, the interpretive center, our maintenance garage on it at this time. But if we were to take that area and have a lot of the uses that we have for this center be put into that site, we can have a lot of the other areas of the park not get used so heavily and be able to be sustained. So if we increase the size of the interpretive center, increase the managed part of the outdoor environment immediately around the interpretive center, have some green development as a part of this, a permeable parking lot, use heat from the ground as a way to heat the building, save energy that way, become a demonstration area because we have so many public, both business and community people coming in, become a demonstration area for how these green technologies can be used so that people can come and see them. As Malcolm said, we do have concept drawings at this point in time. They're on the handout that you have there in front of you that show the site with the permeable parking lot, the community event areas, and the interpretive center with solar panels and wind energy, outdoor amphitheaters, indoor amphitheaters. We're turning groups away at this point in time because we simply aren't big enough. The building we have right now is only 5,000 square feet. We can have a little over 100 people in it at one time. We have a lot of schools that now, because of the new standards in the state, they'd like to try to have their kids come out all at once. We can't take 250 students from a school at one time. And that's what we're being requested sometimes to do, and we just simply have to turn those groups away. So we're looking at increasing the size of the building, increasing the size of the walkways close up to the building so we can accomplish some of these tasks. We have a business plan in place for how we would pay for any increased administrative costs as a result of this. Actually, the energy people are telling us that our energy costs would go down substantially that we already have just by putting in some of these new heat systems, and that increased groups that we would have would easily pay for the increased administrative cost that we would have. So we're looking at increases in numbers of programs, increase in exhibit room visits, increased in volunteer participation. When I wrote this just a few months ago, we were at 12,000, and I said we just finished the numbers. We had our volunteer dinner a week ago, and we were at 16,000 already up from this. So being open to the public more, having more celebrations and more community activities at Springbrook is what we're looking at for the future. So Springbrook is a place that has a lot of diverse natural habitat, a lot of things that attract people from distances to come in. A few years ago, we had an owl at Springbrook because it was visible. We had 7,000 people fly here, literally, from California, Florida, New York State, other areas. We were on the front page of the Star Tribune with an owl, this little owl that had flown down and spent about 2.5 months at the center. Every day we had over 100 people there coming in, calling us from Arkansas and other places as they were driving up in their car, wanted to know if that little owl was still there.
Is that the group of owls that migrated down from Canada?
It was a boreal owl. It was one of the different species, yes, that came down to do that. But this particular owl was extremely difficult to see, and people had gone on tours up into Canada to see it, and even after they had gone up there, they hadn't been able to find it. But because we were in deciduous forest down here, this little owl wasn't afraid of people. You could walk up within a couple feet of it. And so we had thousands of people coming, literally flying in from around the country just to be able to see this. And we've had other events like that happen. Because we're in an urban setting, we have easy access. And so that's the kind of thing that happens at a site like this. But along with having all those beautiful natural areas, we end up having a lot of people. And that's what this project is requesting funds for, is to be able to maintain the delicate ecosystem and have a place for those owls to come to, and at the same time be able to have access for all of these people that want to have access to be able to see it. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you.
Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking through. The only place I find that gives any acreage is 7-acre gateway, but how much is your total acreage?
The total acreage of the park is 127 acres.
I don't know if you said that earlier. I might have missed it, but it sounds like you're doing a heck of a job.
We have a lot of fun.
What is your permeable parking lot made out of? Class 5?
There's a number of different systems, and what we're looking at, each of the different systems, the state has been working with different types of paving for permeable parking lots now for about 7 or 8 years. They have several of them that are functioning very well, and we're looking at all of them. The big concerns are, can you use a snowplow on them, and does it have to be a special snowplow? That's what the Director of Public Works for the city is looking at. And what we're finding is that some of them do not require special plow blades, so that the city would be able to do that. But the decision hasn't been made specifically what kind of permeable parking lot. It's just the commitment that we want to try to.
Along those same lines, don't put any fancy curbs in because those snow plows break them up. So.
I think the other thing that if you look on your one plan, it's hard to see it there, but it shows a rain garden. And that's something else we'd like to feature as a part of this, is how not only we can do that to work with our own wetlands within the park, but how businesses and developers can come to our parking lot and be able to see that they can do this kind of thing. That way they can deal with the runoff that they have going off of their parking lots, but also using rain gardens, which eliminates the whole curb aspect. I agree with you.
Good. Any questions from the committee? Any further comments, Senator Chaudhry? Okay. We're gonna lay this one over also for inclusion as a recommendation to the bonding committee. Do we have to make a formal motion on that when we get it done? Okay. All right. Mr. O'Rourke, next meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, next meeting is Wednesday. We'll be continuing on with a few more bonding projects. In addition, we have a bill from Senator Sparks from the Department of Deed, I believe. For the unemployment insurance.
The replacement?
Yeah. Okay. So.
All right. Any further comments from the committee? Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
That's got a tough question.
Do they? You need this photo?
Enough. Well, Matt took care of that, I'm sure.
Oh, it sounds. Oh, yeah, I can't.
You're piecing the valley.
That's what I said.
I live.
You said.
Certainly, anything in
your eyes on this one.
Just somehow escaped.
Last year, the bonding thing.
Oh.
Land and Water Conservation Fund Act monies.
I know. But see, I were using those to say as much as you.
Is this your board side?
Yes.
Yeah. Those Springbrook ones. Look at
that. Down here.
That's there. Almost took their cable. They're disconnected.
That might support. Not there.
Wow, Kenny.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yes, yes. Oh, goodness.
We're going to put them back.
Yes.
This is how
they can
cut out. Want me to what?
Put a new one on the clipboard.
Oh, okay.
Talk to you.
Well, we have.
Said replace. I'm sorry.
So if there's a better time for them to contact you, okay.
I'll see you later at the Garden Club.
Okay, I'll set up a meeting.
Be there with a different
Yes, yes. I was thinking you were the speaker.
Say,
Barge and I.
You should do it sooner.
He's talking about
Clem and I.
I'll have small garden,
small space.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Creating garden rooms or
whatever.
Outdoor
yeah.
Rooms or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for the day. Hello, how are you?